Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and my name's Mark Salem, and you're certainly welcome to join us. It's real simple. All you do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to talk about cars for the next 2 hours. I'm really good at chiming in on an argument between a brother and brother, or a mother and father, or anything like that at all. I just need it presented fairly, okay? That's kind of important, just represent it fairly. So I don't want to get a call the next week and say, hey, my brother lied to you about our argument with respect to Chevys and Fords or whatever. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. Kurtz is proud to be an independent shop, family-owned and operated, been around a very, very long time. And so it's a situation where he's a good guy. And his staff is good, and he's been around a long time. So if you're near I-17 in Bell and you don't have a repair shop you trust, or if you'd like to try someone new, then it's a good idea to stop by Kurtz Auto Repair. Again, the northeast corner of I-17 in Bell. Okay, here's what's kind of going on in the industry, according to Mark Salem. We used to have cars, and we still do to some extent, the older cars that came in every 3,000 miles for oil changes. So our industry, had the opportunity. Some of us rotated tires every 3,000, some of us did 6, some of us did 9, but basically each shop had its own thought process or its own what's best for my customers or what's best for me. You know that and I know that. So we got to see every 3,000 miles. And there was a lot of what we call laying ground. So we'd say, okay, next time you come in, you're going to need a cooling system flush or whatever. And the owner's manuals were very specific. And so they wanted you to change the transmission fluid at or about 36,000 miles. So those are the kinds of things that we dealt with. Today, it might as well be the Wild West. Today, everybody is interpreting the owner's manual. Lots of shops are interpreting the owner's manuals that benefit them. Lots of shops are playing, they treat each customer different. What is it I think you need? Your transmission fluid is brown. I think we need to flush it, put a filter in it. Your transmission fluid, you only have 60,000 miles. Your manual says you go to 100. You're good. There's nothing I can sell you. Oil changes, they now are at 5,000 on the short side, 7,500, 10 and 15,000 mile intervals. Now, we at 15,000 miles, we used to change your oil, what, 6 times? So 5 times for sure. And during that time, we got to rotate your tires every other time, and we got to do other stuff. But today, if you're at the 10 to 15,000 mile oil change interval, oftentimes you don't see us but once a year. So what we're doing now is, it's a situation where we've redesigned the owner's manual, and many of the shops, no, some of the shops, I'm not going to use many, some of the shops will then create the perception that owner's manual isn't really for Arizona. There's nobody that has the weather like Arizona. So the manual talks to, you know, the central portion of the United States, the Nevada, the Virginians, or the Virginia, and that whole middle band. So it really doesn't apply to Arizona because Arizona is completely different than everybody else. Well, you know, we have hotter weather and all that stuff. So then we also have, which is real prevalent now, is that we also have that we're going to cover all your maintenance. So when you buy a new car, the first three years or the first whatever, we're going to cover all your maintenance. Well, it's nothing to give you a free oil change, even if it's synthetic, because if we charge you $100, $120, it's going to cost us $30 less. But we get to look at your car. And we have the opportunity to sell to you and offer up things that you should do or need to do. So it's called a reoccurring sales opportunity. A reoccurring. Now, it wouldn't be reoccurring if we let you come in on your own. It's only reoccurring if we make it. you can do whatever you want. There's the other side of the coin is there's shop owners that say, we are a bad area for weather. And my customers don't necessarily keep up on their maintenance. And most of them are procrastinators and they don't come in when they should. And when they do come in, there's lots wrong. That could very well be something. But the bottom line is I'm not a fan of this, we'll take care of all your maintenance for the next 2 or 3 years, because, again, it's a reoccurring sales opportunity. And every time you go in there, it is my opinion that virtually every time you go in there, you're going to get a bill that's between $500 and $1,000 based on what they think you need. And very few places are going by the owner's manual. So here's my suggestion, and I know we got a caller. 602-508-0960. There's one in front of you. 602-508-0960. So here's what you do. This will really change how you're treated. Open up your owner's manual and take paper clips and clip both sides or little bitty, you know, spring clips. Leave it on your dashboard face down. And when you talk to your service facility, you say, I've opened up the owner's manual and I'd like you to stick to that. If you get the hustle and say, Arizona different, that manual's not written for Arizona, we're much hotter than everybody else, blah, 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 then Mark Salem would suggest that you go maybe visit some other shops to see if you can find somebody that's not really interested in taking care of themselves. They're really interested in taking care of their customers. And folks, there's a lot of them out there right now. A lot of them in both sides, but there's a lot of good shops out there. It's just really a matter of, you know, finding out where they're at. Oh, who's on the phone?
We have Tony.
Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
My son has a 2003 Honda CR-V. The starter drive does not engage. You can hear it spinning. He replaced the starter. Same thing. They claim they bench tested his core and it worked. I do not know if the gear actually spun out. Where do we go from here?
Well, who's doing the work? Is your son and a couple of his buddies or
my
something like that?
My son, he's up in Minnesota.
Okay. Well, frankly, I would have probably if I thought the starter was bad and it was just spinning the starter, but the teeth aren't engaging the flywheel, then I probably would have popped the starter out. I'd have looked inside to make sure the teeth are there at that spot.
And yes, he did not do that.
What's that?
He did not do that. You're talking about the ring gear teeth?
I'm talking about the teeth on the flywheel, or they call it a flex plate.
Right. No, he did not look at those teeth. But I did have him rotate the crankshaft about 90 degrees and try it again, and same thing.
Okay. Now, when he applies power to the starter, what is he doing? Where is he? The ground is probably on the ears of the starter. Where is he applying power?
He's applying power just with the switch, the ignition switch.
So he has the starter, and it's grounded. Is it in the car or is it on the bench?
No, it's in the car, the new starter, or a new rebuilt one.
I don't want to test it that way. You're already in the bench you're in now.
Yeah, I know it.
Okay, well, I'm trying to make suggestions to you.
Yes, sir, I'm open to anything.
Okay.
Here's my bottom line. He's talking about now he read online something that the alternator might have something to do with it. Nice. I said, no possible way. He's got a good battery, load tested, it's fine. All his cables and that are good. I'm trying to avoid him throwing other parts at it. Am I wrong?
No. No. he's part of some portion of generation that they think that people on the internet are better qualified to fix their car by guessing. So you might as well open up your pocketbook, and you're going to talk to Henry, who's an inmate in New Hampshire, who has a computer in his cell, and Henry's going to help you fix your car, and he's about as adept as that than I am if I was 10 years old. So
right.
Getting on the internet and having somebody fix your car is a little bit crazy to me. That's like you getting on the internet and finding having somebody tell you, why do you have a pain at the bottom of your head? Why does my knee hurt? Those kinds of things.
I understand.
Okay, here's the deal. He's already got the starter out. He needs to put it in a vise, and he needs to have a jumper cables, and he needs to put the negative on the ear of the starter, and he needs to put a screwdriver in the positive side, and he needs to know which terminal to fire up, because if he hits the bottom tang, the 6 o'clock of the solenoid, all it's going to do is spin the drive, but we have to hit the terminal on the solenoid to throw the starter drive out. So he can bench test it all he wants, but if he doesn't have his leads right, he might as well be taking a leak in the wind.
Right.
So, we have to tell. Now, I heard you say, "Oh, test the battery." And so he needs to get a voltmeter, and when he puts it in and he hits the key, the voltage shouldn't drop below 9.5. If it's dropping below 9.5 and we still have a problem, you have you got a battery problem, you got a voltage problem. We can't drop below 9.5. A 12 volt starter doesn't work at 9.5.
Understood.
And then we've got voltage when the fully charged battery should be about 13. And if we're going to turn on the alternator, we should get almost one more volt, so we should be between 13.8 and 14. And as far as the idea that the starter or the starter's performance is based on the alternator, if you want to teach him a lesson, have him go buy that $200 alternator and see how well that works for him.
I know it. That's what I'm trying to tell him. I see no correlation between the two.
Well, tell him, hey, why don't you just unplug the back of the alternator? Just unplug it and see what happens. I mean, nothing's going to happen. But he can get on the internet and he goes, I have a 2003 CRV. And I've been told that the alternator has everything to do to the performance and the operation of the starter. What do you guys think?
Right.
I have him do that. I'm going to tell you something.
Have them.
Guys like me don't play on the internet.
I wish I was there, because I would have never reassembled that. He's got to take the intake manifold off and have to get to it. And he put it back together before he tried it.
Yeah.
And big mistake. So
there's lots of moving parts in this. What's the battery voltage when he hits the key? Is the starter drive spinning, or is the starter drive not being thrown into the flex plate? It can spin, but the drive doesn't move forward. We need it to move forward to crank the engine. That's kind of how it is. Why doesn't he just call the local auto parts store and he says this? Tell me who pays their bills. Tell me who's got some old gray-haired guys working there. Tell me who can help me diagnose this starter. Who doesn't return parts? So if the shop doesn't borrow a starter, try it, and it doesn't work, and they send it back. So he's looking for the best shop according to the guys at the auto parts store, and they typically know that. So call around, talk to a couple auto parts store. He finds the same shop mentioned twice. That's where his car goes, and that's who fixes it. He says to them, what's your checkout? And I think the average shop for this mess that they're going to walk into is $50 to $75. I may fix it or I may diagnose it earlier, but already you've changed everything. You may not even have the wires on the solenoid correct. So I need to do all that, $50 to $75, and then I'll tell you. However, it could be that I'll fix it for $50 to $75. So that's the way I do it. Anyway, I got to run 18 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock on the line, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here at your service. And we got quite a few callers. But let me tell you real quick, Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. I'm not going to send you to a shop that I think is going to rip you off and that I don't already know that the owner and the manager have your interest in front of their own, and I already know they can fix cars. So Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, full-serve, family-owned operation, served the Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. Okay, let's go to the phones. And Henry, I hope you're not the prisoner from New Hampshire I was talking about.
Inmate 3559 reporting.
Henry, I'm sorry I offended you, but I'm hoping you aren't in there for murder of an auto mechanic or something like that.
You want to know something interesting? My prison wife's name is Mark.
Okay. I'm all ears, Henry.
That's what he said. So, Okay. Anyway, I've got a 2013 Chrysler 200, and I had the alternator replaced by a company that rhymes with Schleppgoys. And I was charged $690 for the whole thing. Did that sound reasonable to you?
I think it's going to be close. I'm thinking the alternator was at least two-thirds to three-quarters of that price.
$360.
How much?
$360, remanufactured.
No, remanufactured doesn't bother me. Really, yes. And truly, there's no such thing as a new part. I mean, and if you do buy a new part, it's still the same part that sold everywhere in the United States, and it came from offshore. So it doesn't that didn't. The rebuilds, in my opinion, are just fine. So it's $360. Tell me what the rest of the $600 was, because all we have is diagnosis and labor.
$20 for diagnosis, $35 for disposal fee, and $127 an hour for labor.
Okay, I can live with the $127. The disposal fee, we have a shop supplies and environmental charge. It's a percentage of the bill. So I don't understand, but it's still something I would ask about. I'm not going to argue with the alternate price, and I'm not going to argue with the labor. It's those other two things that have my panties wadded up. So just ask them. And you can say to them, I'm a little unhappy about this. If you want to keep me as a customer, can we adjust this appropriately, especially the environmental fee? Because I don't understand why I'm paying that. Well, sir, we used rags to clean our hands, and the alternator dripped a little oil on the ground we had to clean up. And you, even though you're not paying your full amount of money when you have your oil change, we're spreading all that environmental stuff amongst everybody.
Well, my thing is the $19 for the inspection. I mean, you replace the part. Most people waive an inspection or diagnosis fee if you do the work.
No.
Well, if it's $20,
No, $20 is a steal. I would have charged twice that much money. No.
I'll see you at lockdown.
Okay, that's fine, Henry. Well, let me just really explain real quick to everybody else. To test the electrical systems of a car, and you don't just test one thing. You test the big dog. First of all, we got to make sure the battery has 14 volts. Then we're going to make sure the cables are clean. We're going to do a volt drop. Volt drop in the engine. We're going to make sure that the engine's firmly attached to the ground. We're going to make sure that the core support's firmly attached to the ground. The fender's attached to the ground. We're going to make sure all those grounds are good. Doesn't take long. Get them. Then we check the battery, and we crank it over, and we better not see lower than 9.6. We do that a couple times. Then we take our meter off, and we start the thing up, and it better go from wherever it's at to 14. So that's fine, too. But it doesn't. So then we check the diode pattern, and there's two diodes that are out. So then we look at it, and we got to make sure the belt's tight, and we got to make sure the belt's in good shape. So you take your hand or your wrench, and you try to move the pulley, and if you can't move the pulley, the belt's fine. But if you can move the pulley... It's not. So you look at this big picture. I'm not doing that for $20. Besides, you're coming in and telling me you need an alternator, and I ain't even going to take your car in because I'm going to put an alternator on there for $360 and $127 in labor, and then it's not going to fix it, and you're going to go, why? And I'm going to say,
yeah, but actually, I had a pulley noise, and they diagnosed it as an alternator.
Oh, fair enough, but I'm using this as an example for everybody else.
Exactly.
You told me to put the alternator on. I did exactly what you said. And you were wrong, and now you want... See, it's kind of like this. I'm going to get in trouble for this. I always do. You had the fun making the baby. Now you want me to pay for it.
Spoken like a true prison wife, Mark.
Thank you very much, Henry. Let's move on. Bob, how can we help you?
Mark.
Yes?
My son has a 2014 GMC with 5.3, and he's always used... the 0W20. He's got about 120,000 miles. And it's using a quart of oil about every 4,000. He always changes it when there's like 10% left on the oil life monitor.
Uh-huh.
Do you think he should go to 5W30?
No. No. I mean, 4,000 miles on a quart of oil at 120,000 miles. And here's what you're not telling me. There's no blue smoke out of the tailpipe, and we aren't fouling spark plugs. And hopefully somebody has put a new PCV valve and a breather element in it, because that reduces some internal pressure. And if he wants to do something, he should pull the spark plugs out of it and look to see where the oil's being burnt. But I'll bet you they're all nice and brown and tan. I'm not real concerned. And then here's the deal. If we go from a 520?
No, 0W20 is recommended.
Right. And you wanted to go
using 0W20 the whole life of the truck.
Okay. It doesn't make any difference because you can put horse manure in there with water, and the engine's not going to know the difference between Pennzoil and Chevron and all that stuff. It makes no difference. The oil, the 0W20, flows like a 0W8 when it's cold and flows like a 0W20 when it's hot. It has the properties of a 0W8 when it's cold and a 0W20 when it's hot. Frankly, you're not going to change the oil consumption unless you put peanut butter in there and he goes to a straight 0W30. So I'm just not real concerned about that. If this was my daughter's car, I'd tell her to stop hot rodding it. But I wouldn't do any work on it, and I might pull the spark plugs if the oil continues. But if you want to thicken up the oil, then go to a 1040 maybe. But I like the idea he's using the synthetic, and I know he's getting the benefit because he's going wide oil changes. So, I mean, it's kind of a wash. And, yes, this is something that we're faced at least once a day out of 20 or 30 cars we take in every day. So, Bob, that's the best I can offer you. Richie, you're up next.
Hey, Mark, thank you. I had this high-pitched squealing noise coming passengers' side around the glove box, and uh-huh. It sounds like this. Stop at the store. I need a gallon of milk. So I got rid of her. My girlfriend picked up Grandma's old Nissan Murano. It has 90-something thousand miles, and rear brakes were done, front brakes were never. I was told that she probably should look at getting new rotors and brakes and use a Nissan or a better brake, not the cheapy lifetime brake from somebody. What okay. do you feel on that?
I don't agree with a word you said.
Okay.
All right. Here's my advice. My advice is go in for an oil change and say, hey, why don't you just check my brakes while you're there? And for you to go in and ask for brakes and rotors or drums and rotors and all the brakes done could very easily cost you $300 to $500. And I think I'd rather have them measure it because on the back of the rotor it says 0.199 and it's saying that's the minimum thickness. So if it's got 0.300, we're in good shape. So the fact that she got all that miles with her first brake job, that's kind of cool because it says she's not racing her car, she's not clamping on the brakes, and she's not late all the time like my wife and my daughter. So when you look at this, honestly, you go in for a brake check, I want you to go in and say, would you rotate my tires and check my brakes at the same time? Now, Discount Tire won't provide that because they're not brake experts and they know that, and I really respect Discount. But next time she goes in for an oil change, hey, would you rotate my tires and check my brakes for me, please? And, you know, with the technology we have today, why don't you send me some pictures? We'll be right back. So don't you forget feedthepig.org. Here's the message I'd like to share with you and so that you understand. You don't want to go in. It's just common sense for us guys. Don't go in there and say, check my brakes and rotate my tires because it's the same thing. That's the same thing. I got to take the tires off to check your brakes. Now, I can look behind them, but you really need a good eyeball. Now, most shops, when they pull the tires on a tire rotation, they check the brakes. It's an opportunity to sell something to you. You just have to be careful. You always ask for to hang on to the brake shoes and let me see him when I come in. Oh, my husband's going to come in, and he pretends he's a mechanic all the time. But anyway, would you just set him aside over here? And if you're going to do front brakes, would you just leave the pads or whatever they're called right there? He'll probably tell you to throw them away. Those are great self-defense for car expense. Keith, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. I have a sort of a two-part question about wheels. I have some 17 by 9-inch wheels on my truck, and I'd really like to replace them. What I found, the wheel I like best has 8.5-inch wide instead of 9. I was wondering if I replace the, put the tires, swapping from the 9s to the 8.5, will I see any kind of a handling or steering change? And what is wheel offset, and how does that enter into the factor, and what does that all do?
Well, you measure from the hub to the back part of the rim. So you put the wheel down, and you put a piece of wood across it, and you measure from the back of the hub of the wheel and to the top of the piece of wood you put, or the bottom of the piece of wood you. Then you do the other wheel as well, and it'll tell you the offset. So if one of them is 6 inches and the other one is 5 inches, then one of them goes inward further than the other one. What you don't want is a whole bunch of outside offset where you got the wheel, you know, the whole tread of the wheel outside the car fender area. As far as the 8.5 versus the 9, that doesn't bother me at all. I'd probably watch the front of the tire or the middle of the tire, and if I start getting wear, I'd drop the air pressure probably 5 pounds.
Hmm. So, very interesting.
If you squeeze a 9-inch tire to 8.5, you're going to kind of bow the tread a little bit. I'm concerned you're going to wear the center out of it. I'm just saying watch that. And then if you are, let's flatten the tire a little bit. It'll be okay.
Alrighty.
Okay.
Alrighty. Thank you very much, Mark.
You bet. Harold, I'm sorry. Harold, you're next.
Hi, Mark. Good show.
Thank you.
My daughter recently bought a brand new Hyundai Sonata with the 2.5-liter engine in it. I was looking through the literature, and I saw the initials GDI after the engine. I called the salesperson, and she told me that stood for gas direct injection. Now, that kind of surprised me, because isn't that kind of like a new high technology to put into a low-priced car? And also, if I recall, a few months ago, you had a discussion on your show relative to problems that have come up on some cars with direct injection. Could you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, that isn't anything that's come up in a long time, but we used to have a carburetor, and that was like a mile away from the mouth of the engine, and the carburetor would mix air and gas, and this concoction would go to the engine, and then we took injectors and put them on the intake manifold, and the computer knows where the what the next thing is, and so on the intake stroke the computer turns on the injector, and so now we have direct injection, and we're spraying it right at the back of the valve. That's not been real successful, and there's a variety of cars that have suffered from carbon buildup.
2 minutes.
And I don't think our industry has figured out what we're going to do next, and I'll tell you why. We used to inject it behind the intake valve. So what's happening now is when we went in closer, we're now starting to build up all this carbon on the back of the valve. Nobody really knows how to get rid of it. And so what's happening is that instead of injecting it behind the valve to clean the oil off of it, we're injecting it, I should say, into the engine. And now, all of a sudden, we've got this big problem with the back of the valve. And there's really no fix for it until you start taking things apart. But there's lots of stuff in a can that you can use. But if she doesn't have GDI, I wouldn't worry about it. I would think that she would be happy.
Well, that's where the initials GDI, I think she has that, if that's on the spec of the car.
If she was my daughter, I would say to her, honey, I need you to hot rod this every once in a while. So you're getting on the ramp. It's 2:30 in the morning. You're on your way to work. There isn't a car within 3 miles. You get to the top of the ramp. Honey, just jam it to the floor and don't let go till you get bottom of the ramp and then back off. That's what I'd do.
Okay.
Okay?
That's okay. Thank you.
All righty, you betcha. You betcha. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Gil's going to answer the phone. He's the nicest guy in the world. He's probably the best board operator, the best engineer I've ever worked for. So please, don't call him any names. Don't be mean to him. And if you make him cry, you're not going to get on the air. 602-508-0960. And since I've been here 2011, 10 years ago, nobody's made Gil cry. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem here. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. That number is 602-508-0960. I'm really good if the wife says, my husband says this, the manual says that. I got that covered. Any kind of dispute, got that covered. My wife wants to buy this car, I want to buy this car, got that covered. So, and just let me tell you real quick, I've been repairing cars since 1979. I've been a master technician since 1991. My shop works on all kinds of cars and diesels and motor homes and even construction equipment. We've been around the block, and I'm not telling you where my shop is because this show is about you, and it's not for me to thump my chest like so many other auto shop shows are. Many of you don't even know where my shop's at, and you don't even know the name of it, and that's fine with me. The idea is this show's about you and your needs. It's not about me thumping my chest. Auto Dynamics is one of the largest, if not the largest, shop in the Sun City area, family-owned and operated since 82. Chuck Nyday and his son, Derek. I've known Chuck since the 60s when I was about 2 years old, and they're really good people. So if you're in the Grand Avenue, 99th Avenue area, the Sun City area, and you're looking for a good shop, I can promise you that Sun City RV at Auto Dynamics, and they also own Sun City RV, but their car repair shop is Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand at 99th Avenue. It's really important for you to understand self-defense for car expense. One of the things that I'm suggesting to people do now is don't take anything verbally from your shop. Just say, I have a bad memory, and you know what? Today is a really busy day. My hard drive between my ears is spinning as fast as it can. Please do this for me. Either write it on the ticket or send me an email and tell me exactly what it is. Tell me how much it's going to cost. Write your name down and your phone number. Because they won't do that if they're trying to take advantage of you. They just won't. They'll come up with an excuse. You're calling their hand, and you're saying, you better tell me the truth, because you might be with the Attorney General's office, and you might be going to take that car to an expert shop, and you might be embarrassed because they told you everything that was wrong. So just the handwrite and sign your name to kind of thing, that creates a little buffer between you and the guys that are wearing a mask and have a little cowboy hat and have two guns in front of them. You know, it's just that bandit kind of thing. So just be prepared. A lot of times you say, is this going to cause me to break down? That's a great question, because if they say, I'm being facetious here, your rear view mirror is loose on the windshield. Oh, is this going to cost me to break down? Yes, ma'am, it could. Well, come on. We all know that that's not true, and I'm using a stupid example. But if they say you need a transmission service, you should look in your owner's manual. Go to the maintenance schedule and just find transmission. There's going to be a bunch of columns, and there's going to be an X at $100,000 and an X at $200,000. Well, he wants to do it at $30,000. That's okay for you to ask. Why are you doing it at $30,000? Well, it looks like there's a bunch of water in your transmission because it's kind of cherry red, strawberry-looking milkshake. Do you launch a boat, or do you have a boat where you bet? Yes, I do. Okay, well, you've aspirated a little bit of water in your transmission fluid, and I'm just saying, hey, why don't we drain it out and put some new stuff in? And I think you shouldn't back your boat in as deep as you've been backing your boat in. So those are kind of reasonable answers. A lot of times what's going on behind the scenes is that your car goes in, and the service writer writes up the ticket. From there, it goes to the guy who dispatches and there may be a service manager involved there. But the dispatcher calls Salem and says, come on up here, take care of Mrs. Jones' car. So I go in the back, and depends on who I am, and depends on who I'm really taking care of. Am I looking out for my customer, or am I looking out for me? So at this particular point, I give a big laundry list of stuff to the service manager or the dispatcher. From there, it goes to the service writer, and the service writer just reads it to you. You can't ask him any questions. It's going to be very difficult for them to explain the dynamics of, you need lower control arm bushings and an alignment, and we're going to have to change your struts, and it's because you have 60,000 miles on it. You're going to just gulp, and it's going to cost you $1,200. So you say, you know what? I haven't seen any symptoms. I'm uncomfortable with this. So just write it all down. Be specific about your estimate. Staple your business card, or I'll pick up a diagnostic sheet, or I'll pick up an estimate, and or write it on the work order, because when I come in to pay for it, it'll be right there. Oh, my husband, he wants to analyze what you say. He doesn't really know anything about cars, but his brother does, and his brother's in Salt Lake City. Those are the kind, it's okay to tell those stories to accomplish your goal. You're not defrauding anybody. You're not taking advantage of anybody. It's okay to fib your way through to make sure somebody's treating you fairly. And if they do treat you fairly and you find out that the service writer has actually gone to bat for you, I'd probably keep that person. I'd probably find out, you work here every day, Monday through Friday. Oh, I don't work Friday. Okay, Monday through Thursday. Yeah. Okay, what's your name? Let me have your business card. Thank you for taking care of me instead of taking care of the tech and the service manager and the dispatcher and you. I appreciate that you had my interest in front of everybody else's. Thank you for being my filter. And that's the service writer's job. You can imagine in the shop there's a bunch of hairy-chested guys with dirty fingernails. If we have a service writer that's brand new, that just got out of high school, and she's now writing service, the dynamic may not be what it would be a year from now. How careful can I walk around this? But I also want to tell you this. There is so many shops in the Valley that play the game the way it should be, and I use that loosely, that take care of their customers really well, that don't sell them stuff, and don't make up maintenance stopping points. Oh, you forgot to clean the inside of your windshield. That's 1995. You have to understand that defrost can only work if we clean the inside of your windshield. Come on, write it down, sign your name, put your phone number there. I'll call the AG's office and find out if they know anything about this maintenance item that says cleaning your windshield for $19.95. I'm being facetious and I'm exaggerating everything, but that's the way it is. But there's lots of shops. If you want to find a good shop, here's what you do. You go to marksalem.com and click on the best car repair shops. We divided the valley into four quadrants, northeast, northwest, southeast, southwest. And we actually have, and obviously Scottsdale's in the east side of town. And we divided Central Avenue and Camelback, and there's my quadrants. There's plenty of shops there. I'll give you another example of a shop for diesels. Nate from Strictly Diesel is up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. He does service and repair, and they are die-hard diesel guys. They work on foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website, so if you want to think about a cold air kit for your diesel, or if you want to find something you can put in the fuel and additive that's going to clean up your injectors, all kinds of stuff like that. Nate does that. He's one of two of the best. Well, there's only two really, really good shops in the Phoenix Valley area, and Nate is head and shoulders above everybody else. So if I had a Chevy, a Dodge, or a Ford, and I had a problem with it, I'd probably make the drive up there or call Nate and say, have you got a rental car facility close by? And he goes, as a matter of fact, we do. And you say, okay, I'm going to bring it in. I'm going to sit in your lobby for just a few minutes. You guys are going to look it over, or a half an hour or whatever. But can you give me a ride to Enterprise? Yes, I can. Okay, thank you very much. So those are completely acceptable discussions to have. And started off with, I'm a new customer. The only person that's responsible for the maintenance on your car is you. It's not up to me to make those stopping. But if you come in and your transmission fluid looks like chocolate, or if your wheel's about to ready to fall off because nobody's packed the wheel bearings, or if your brakes are down to metal, and I drive it into the shop and I hear that, I'm morally obligated to write it down and tell you. But in that conversation, the service writer would say something like this. It'd say, have you felt anything in your brake pedal lately? Have you heard any kind of grinding noise or squealing noise? Have your brakes, is the performance of them kind of gone backwards a little while? Yes. My wife has better hearing than I do, and she says there's a noise. It's kind of a growling noise. She says it doesn't stop as good, and she says she can't tell where it's coming from because it sounds like it's all over the car. Okay. We found your brakes in really bad shape. I think you can continue on the rears, but you need fronts, and you've dug into the rotors. So two rotors, a set of brakes, the labor, the sales tax, shop supplies, and environmental services. I don't want to add it up because I'm unclear about what it is, but I'm going to tell you that the estimate is it will be no lower than $285, and it won't be any higher than $330. And I know I got a $50 swing in there, but I just don't know what I'm going to run into. So I don't have to call you back. I'm going to ask you for that, but I could come in low. Most of us want to come in low. We want to take the bottom of the range because it instills confidence in our customers. And obviously, the nicer and the more trusting the customer is at the front counter, the better off the shop is. Unless, of course, you're one of those wing dingers that you're just going to ding everybody that comes in and you don't care about customers that come in on a regular basis. You're just looking for every new face that walks in the door. And if you think those shops aren't here, you got another thing coming. And some of them are chains. Let me say a few are chains. So, like I said right now, and like I said at the beginning of the hour, oh, by the way, 602-508-0960. We'll be back after the top of the hour. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. The idea is that your manual is kind of the maintenance Bible for your car. It's a hard argument to make that you should change from those miles and years, unless, of course, something's quite different. I need to change your differential fluid. I know it doesn't change to 100,000, but I saw the hitch on the back, and the differential has water in it. And the reason I know that, instead of the differential fluid being brown, it's kind of a white, a dirty brown foam. So you got water in that differential. It's not that much money. I need to drain and refill it. It's going to be $100, $110. But in reality, it's something you need to do, and I'm going to write it on your ticket. See, that's how it really is. And yes, I have a boat. And yes, I do. Have you ever backed it in where, like, the bottom of the tailgate is underwater? I've backed it in where I've got a bed full of water. And you're going, well, we probably ought to do something about that. So maybe you back it up real fast, slam on the brakes, and let the boat slide off the trailer. I don't know, but there's water in your differential, or we need to annually change the water, and at the end of the boating season, you bring it in and change your water. So that's kind of how it should be. I don't pretend that I'm the know-it-all of all of this stuff. I've got a lot of experience. I've worked as an expert witness in the auto repair and in the tire and fuel and emissions and lots of different stuff. So I've been around the block a lot, but there's guys in this valley that are older and smarter than I am. And I think the message there is you can get on the internet and you can find out how long these shops are and if they've had a name change and stuff like that. I would suggest you do that. A big conglomerate of money just came in and bought two chains. There's been a difference in pricing, I'm told, by guys who have seen tickets before and after. And, of course, when the big guys with money buy a bunch of auto repair shops, they're going to raise the prices, try to make their money back, and it's normal.
1 minute.
I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that's what happens. So just be wary, and you can, anytime you're going to use a new shop, why don't you just have an oil change done? And if they're really nice to you, and they explained the process, and they came in underneath their estimate, and they didn't give you a laundry list of things you need to do, isn't that kind of what you're looking for? Or if they say to you, Mr. Salem, the next time you come in, you'll be due for a tire rotation, and there is a little bit of outside edge on the front tires, and we'd like to move those to the back. And the back ones have a nice square pattern for the tread, and that's what we should do. So you might want to look at your tires and compare the front to the back when you get home, but it's time to rotate them. And, by the way, that's $22 or whatever the heck the price is. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. This is 960 The Patriot, KKNT. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we have another hour of Under the Hood with Mark Salem. You're welcome to give us a call. The lines, we have four lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If I screwed it up, 602-508-0960. And, of course, 0960 is 960 The Patriot, KKNT. Ben, hold on about 30 seconds. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. It's the only shop in Mesa that I recommend. It doesn't mean that he's the only good shop in town. He's the only one that I have thoroughly checked out. I like Brian and Thelma, husband and wife. I know their parents, and they've been around a long time. There's other shops in Mesa I'm sure are good shops, but there's always a risk of me sending you to a shop and have it turn into an ugly situation. Well, that won't happen. So they have ASE certified technician. They really do a good job with friendly reminders when your vehicle is in for service. And, of course, they know right from wrong. Thompson's Auto Repair, they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Ben, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I had a comment, if I could.
Sure.
And a comment on your last caller's inquiry as far as valve buildup.
Okay.
I'm a 20-plus year ASC certified automotive technician. I was blessed to recently join with a Phoenix area auto truck repair facility, and I've worked for places in the past that could. They would try to fix stupid if they could. They would charge you to try. And thankfully, I started this repair facility similar to you that could fix anything but the crack of dawn or a broken heart.
Yep.
And
yep.
I just wanted to say God bless all of the shop owners and shops who treat their employees and customers with the same love they treat their own family.
That's true.
This is what we need in America.
You're
These
right.
repair facilities are the future of our industry and what our country needs. And the only body pain I'm recovering from after my first week of work are the sore muscles on my face from smiling the entire week.
Well, and let me add to that. And you smile continually as the wife tells you how to fix the car according to her husband. And you smile when somebody they said, I just had a premium oil change not too long ago, and I want to change my oil again. And you looking at synthetic and the sticker's 10,000 miles, and now you have to explain why you're chasing business out of your shop. Not chasing. I'm just using that as an example.
Sure.
You're telling the customer that you're not due for the oil change yet. Let me check your oil. So you've been around the block, I can tell.
My second comment, and I wanted your opinion on this, and you had said that our industry to date doesn't really have a fix other than chemical products as far as removing carbon deposits on valves. There's been some experimentation in the past that I've been aware of, never really been personally hands-on, had any repairs, but water injection for horsepower gains and race applications. And water was used traditionally years ago to clean out carbon. Generally dumped down a throttle body or carburetor with an engine wide open. And you see a plume of smoke out the back. What would the possibility of a direct water injection system, maybe on highway speed applications, do you feel that would be something that could be feasible in application?
Okay. I was thinking as you were talking, and so I may be off base and I may take a couple arrows for this, but that's okay. You didn't give me warning like last week you were going to say this, but that's okay. I think if we did a water injection, the question would be is where would we inject it? We would inject it upstream where before the mass airflow sensor, because I don't think that's going to work well. If we go after the mass airflow sensor, we have to vaporize that water before we send it into the engine, because we can't stand to, for a hydrolock the motor. If the injector fails, is it going to fail open or close? Because if it fails open, we could very well blow that cylinder up. I agree that water injection seems to be an obvious one, and I agree that there is some guys out there and some companies out there that are doing that. But the question is water's corrosive, and are we going to filter it, and how are we going to make sure that we have good water, not RO water, but we don't want rusty water in the tank? Where are we going to put the tank? Who's going to turn the injector on and off? And that kind of stuff. It's kind of a big, how are we going to pull that off? And
yeah, that's a big one if. And I've thought about that as well, as far as direct injection into the cylinder. But then again, you're looking at emission standards as well.
Thank you for that.
So yeah, it's just something I've thought about over the years. And thanks for your opinion, and I appreciate you taking your time.
Okay, now I'm going to tell you something. Don't tell anybody else. I think there's a correlation in the severity of this carbon on the back of the intake based on who's driving. It seems to some of the experts that the harder they push the throttle and the higher they take the RPMs, and the more that they drive it kind of aggressively, but well within the law, that it seems that makes a difference. Now, that's not going to make grandma, who's 70, 80, 90 years old, go out and hot rod her car, and she's not going to hire her grandson to do that. But there does seem to be some correlation. But I agree with you in this respect. If there's a problem, before I pull the heads and start cleaning up the back of the intake valves, I'm going to try some chemicals. And I think the chemicals might work, providing that we follow the directions, as men don't. We follow the directions on the application. So let me know if you find something different. I'd be interested. Okay?
I appreciate that. Okay. Maybe someday all of our spark plugs will be in amber gold on the porcelain.
Okay.
Have a good day, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Anybody in the wings?
Yes, we do. We have another caller called Ben.
Oh, Ben number two, Ben version two. How can I help you?
Hey, I just want to get your opinion on something here. I'm going to ask you a question, and then I'm going to I'll drop out and listen for your answer, if that's all right.
Sure.
Okay, I have a 2008 Dodge 6.7 Cummins. Now, I think we can all agree that the Dodge is merely just a rolling shipping container for the Cummins engine. I have the 68 RFE transmission, approximately 272,000 miles on the motor, so just barely broken in, just getting into the sweet phase of it here. I'm slipping fourth and fifth gear, and after I drive for about an hour, transmission is starting to overheat. Now, I know I'm going to have the pan dropped and have that looked at. I do all the other maintenance on it myself, you know, like I'm greasing ball joints and pitman arm and, you know, checking rear differential lube and everything like that. So everything mechanical is all right on it. But transmission to me is completely out of my wheelhouse. It's Greek. It's Chinese. I don't know what I'm looking at, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. My question, I guess, sorry, long question here. Would you recommend doing a rebuild on that 68 RFE, or would you recommend using that as maybe a core and having a completely new one installed?
Okay.
I also should mention that before the EPA rules came out and everything, I have it deleted and have a bunch of tunes on it and get great, great, great gas mileage. Thanks. I'm going to hang up and listen. Thanks, Mark.
That's a whole bunch. I'm going to go from the backside. DEF is diesel exhaust fluid, and you removed all of that kind of stuff and probably put a tuner in it to kind of hide that you did that. I sure hope you kept the old parts. The old parts are going to be big. They're going to fill up the top of a picnic table. I hope you kept them, because you need to know that people are getting caught all the time. And then we say, did you save the old stuff so we can put it back on? And they said no. And the last bill was $7,200 to put the truck back. So it's kind of tough. Your transmission, there is no such thing as a new one. No such thing as a new one. So go ahead, call around, do whatever you want to do. You'll find out what I already know. There's no such thing as a new one. Yours is an 08. You really think that we've got a 12-year-old new one on the shelf? And the ones from the dealerships have been rebuilt, and the ones that come from me are coming rebuilt. I don't know what you expect out of that, but 270,000 miles, that's 10 times around the equator. You got more than enough life out of that thing. So I don't know that I'd spend a whole lot of time trying to diagnose it, because why do you care? You can spend a whole lot of money diagnosing it and then having somebody say, I got bad news for you. So the transmission in your Dodge truck is really a nice transmission, because I have one. So they take a lot of abuse.
2 minutes.
I know that I've loaned my truck to other cowboys who have overloaded the trailers or hauled more big fat cows than they should have, and my transmission at 160 is still perfect and the fluid's not burnt. And I also wonder how you know the transmission overheated. Perhaps the sensor did that and told you that. I'd be wanting to smell the fluid to see, you know, what the outcome was of that. But I would, you got two choices. Go start shopping. How much to take my old transmission out, put a rebuilt one in, flush the system, flush the cooler, and what kind of warranty do you have, and what does all that cost? If you wanted to start that way, you can. Most everybody's going to give you a range anyway, because we don't know how dirty and greasy it is underneath it and all that other stuff, and I'm sure if you've done your work, it's clean. But there's a real risk, and then you have a problem that some guys won't do that because they say, I want to diagnose your problem, because what happens if we have a transmission controller that's the problem that's making your transmission act up? And we don't do the controller, but we put in this $6,000 rebuilt transmission, and you have the same problem. So you told us to change the transmission. We did what you said, but you misdiagnosed it. And so now, probably not with you, Ben, number two, version two, but with most anybody else, there's going to be an argument about why didn't you know I was wrong. and then unfortunately, when you go in and tell the doctor that you think you have a hatchet in the back and he does x-rays and he says you don't, then you can't very well argue with him because you told him what to do. So, but anyway, Ben, the 6.7 Cummins is good. I wasn't aware that it was there that early, because mine is a 12, and it's the last of the non-DEFs. But I'm going to take you at your word, and it doesn't make any difference, because 6.7 Cummins, along with that transmission, is the best combination I've ever owned. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. And Gil, the board op, and the engineer who makes me sound so good, and I will be back in a minute.
Let's face it.
Okie dokie, 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Blackwell Automotive is up at 40th and Greenway. He doesn't really know what he's doing. He can hardly do an oil change by himself. His wife's there to kind of guide him. She handles the front counter, and he actually sits in his office a lot and watches cartoons on Channel 8. He does have a couple of vintage cars in there, and he does do that kind of work. But Polly, his wife, helps him with all of that, and Aaron, his service writer. So when you go into Blackwell Automotive at 40th and Greenway, don't ask for Tom. Ask for Aaron or Polly, because they're the ones, they're the brain trust of Blackwell Automotive. Okay, Paul, you're up first.
Hello.
Hi, Paul, go ahead.
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, Mark, I got a question on if there's a transmission shop you'd recommend that's pretty good on power glides, the cast iron. I got a 1953 Bel Air that I need to have some work done on.
I would go to automatic, or I'd call Automatic Transmission Exchange and talk to Phil. He's been around. He worked on Fred Flintstone's car. Didn't have an automatic. The Power Glide is pretty easy to work on, but there's a whole lot of young bucks in the transmission business that have never seen or worked on or even driven or shifted a Power Glide.
Exactly, that's the problem I ran into the last shop I took to.
Now, Phil is not going to have any problem. The question is that I would prefer that you say this to me. I want to take you for a drive, and I want you to see what I'm talking about, or I put it into gear and it doesn't move at all. But it does cold. It'll move a little bit cold, but it won't do hot. I mean, that kind of stuff is kind of what we want. And
yeah, what it does, it will move. It's just it has a leak. And I think it's the bushing that just wasn't put in there properly. So,
okay,
you know, because it will run. It just it develops a leak, and if it's sparked, it'll leak the fluid out.
Is it out the back?
So,
the tail shaft housing?
I believe so. It's been a while since I had it out to check it, so
okay.
I don't really remember on that.
All right. Well, here's I'm going to use you an example, and please don't be mad at me. You went from a rebuilt transmission to a leak, and if you're talking about the tail shaft, every single gray-haired guy in town can put a bushing in that and a seal in that and make it work unless that tail shaft housing is wiggling around like a watch on a chain. So I don't know that I'd jump out there on a Power Glide. I'll tell you that Phil's the guy. There's two guys in town that don't do retail work. There's Alger up in North Phoenix, and then you got Lorenzo in the Tri-City area. We use both of those guys. But it's kind of like we fix this kind of stuff, and then if it's an R&R, take it out and put it in and have it rebuilt, then we're going to use them. But they don't want to deal with customers. They're really nice guys, but they said we'd rather have the shop run interference for us. But automatic transmission exchange, talk to Phil, and you'll be good.
Okay. Hey, I appreciate your help on this, Mark. Thank you.
You betcha. Dennis, you're up next.
Mark, I really enjoy your show. You do a great job. Love to hear you guys. Hey, quick question. I just bought a brand new 2021 Lexus RX 350, and the dealer's telling me that to bring it, you know, they pay for the first oil change, but it's at 10,000 miles. Should I feel okay with that? Or, you know, I grew up working in a gas station, changed the oil every 3,000 miles, and now it's like 5, now at 10. I plan on keeping the car probably, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Okay. Well, I'm going to change your question. Mark, what do you drive? A diesel. What does your wife drive? A Ford Edge. And she bought it without me, okay? She went out and bought that car because that car would have never seen the light of day on any property I own, but I love her. We've been married a long time. But they both have synthetic, and we're on a 10,000-mile oil change. I actually go to the diesel a little longer because it holds more oil. The synthetic oils are so far superior to the stuff we had in the 70s and the 80s and even the 90s.
Right.
And I know where you're going with this, and let me offer middle ground. Why don't you go 6 and then change the filter? Why don't you go 6 and pull into a quick lube shop or in somebody's shop and have them change the complete oil and filter? You're going to shed the most metal in the first 5,000 miles. It's going to get caught by the filter anyway, so it's not going to be circulated. And so
I agree,
your car is going to just love synthetic oil. And here's why. I'll give you a quick oil lesson, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Regular oil turns to a solid at 15 below zero, and then a semi-synthetic is probably about 45, and a full synthetic will pour out of the can at 60. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So on the cold side. On the hot side, the oil we had, your dad and I had, it'll turn to a tar at just before the motor blows up. And a synthetic oil, the engine has to exceed 500 degrees before the oil turns from a liquid to tar. And I want to tell you, at 250, your motor's toast anyway. Let me go 250 to 280. I'll spread it out. So the answer is if they want to do your first oil change, you can either tell them yes or you can go do it yourself. They're not going to be able to void your warranty. All you really need to do is look in your owner's manual. Is it a 020 or what kind of weight are they telling you to put in? And I would get as close to that as I can. But I agree.
And okay, so at 10,000 miles, when you pull the dipstick out, will the oil be brown or will it be clear?
Now that's a misnomer. I don't care.
Okay.
I don't care.
Okay.
The old days, we'd look at the oil and we'd go, ugh. Well, we had oil that Fred Flintstone and Barney made. We had cars back there that sucked more oil and burned more oil than we have all this. You don't. Now think about this. And I'm please. I'm not. I'm using you and our conversation as kind of a, my diesel, the oil is black within 500 miles after I got it. And I, like I said, I'm in the 10, 12,000 mile range. But it's really, I have done some oil analysis and what I did is I go 5,000 miles and pull a sample and then I change the oil and I go 5,000 miles and pull a sample. I'm looking for the growth of metal. This one's 500 parts per million, and this one's 2,000. Uh-oh.
Right.
That if you want to do that,
they don't seem to be worried about metal fragments anymore either.
No.
You know, like, maybe they're building the motors better or something.
No, we're polishing them with better oil. So, yes, we're going to be shaving up the cylinders just a little bit till we smooth them. But we've got such better oil now that we can polish everything on the inside without tearing it up. It's kind of like, do we have two pieces of sandpaper inside the engine like we used to? Well, the oil couldn't handle it. Today, we've got an oil that can handle it till it polishes both sides. So you're okay.
Okay, very
now, did
good.
Your,
well, I appreciate that.
All right, did your wife okay this new Lexus?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, she got the color she wanted.
Good for you.
What do you think?
Well,
I've been married for almost 50 years. What do you think?
And no, and I'm just behind you. And so you and I walked the same path. She bought the Ford, and I didn't talk to her for like 2 hours. Okay? I won't even drive in the Ford unless I put my Mickey Mouse mask on. And so I literally have a Mickey Mouse magic because I can't afford to be seen in a Ford. And and so I love her, and I can't get her to trade it out to like a Denali or a Tahoe or, you know, my little car, the seat's face down, and I can haul all the junk I want, and if I need to haul more junk, I'll use your truck. But you already have explained to me and everybody else, it's important to make them happy, and you're going to fight the big fights and not the small ones.
Exactly.
All right.
Hey, thank you, sir. You have a good day.
And to you, too. Thank you very much. Steve, I can't get you, and Keith, I can't get you, but we're going to go into about a three-minute break in 20 seconds, and then I'm going to get you without any fanfare or any kind of yapping. I'm going to go right to Steve, and then we're going to go right to Keith. And the lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. So if you want to call in, we got three lines open, 602-508-0960. About that 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, the ad just before me, just a dad and his daughter talking about doing the wax ring between the toilet and the sewer pipe, and he wants something to scrape it off. If you have ever pulled an old toilet off and put a new toilet on, you'll see the wax ring. It's a gasket, but it's not really. I appreciate the advertisement, but it's not really something I think my daughters want to learn how to take off. Okay, we're going to go to the phones like we promised. Steve, you're up first.
Hi, Mark. I'm calling. I had a general question regarding batteries, car batteries.
Okay.
And I moved out to Phoenix a few years ago, and I quickly realized that the heat shortens the life of my regular car battery significantly. It seems like if I can get 3 years out of a battery, that's pretty good out here. The question is, I'm looking at a hybrid, and I'm wondering if the heat is going to have the same effect on hybrid batteries, and is that a concern? Could it take a couple years away from them? And I know they're pretty expensive to replace.
Well, they are. Many of them have some really long warranties. In Arizona, we're not the overwhelming average is just slightly newer than your 3 years. I mean, they may go four. And a battery, every time you cycle it, so you take electricity from it and bring it back up, that's what causes problems. I can't answer your question. There's there's no battery I'm going to send you to, because virtually every battery is made by Johnson Controls, and they just put a different label on them. And if you're going to get a battery, I'd shop the cheapest son of a gun I could find. As far as the hybrid cars are concerned, we're talking a whole different animal here, because on the hybrids, you're going to use the battery over time, and then you're going to bring it back up to charge. Now, using the battery over time may very well be many, many miles, and then you're going to bring it back up. So it's a cycle. So most of us are going to cycle our battery once a week. In your Prius, you're probably going to go a little longer than that. So it's just how many bounces can we run it through. But, you know, it's really a matter of a gas or the Prius, and forget the battery, because you're right, the Prius is going to cost you a lot of money. And you can put a whole lot of batteries in that gasoline-powered car for what you're going to do on the Prius. So there's nothing. I think you're appropriate for 3 years. I get 3 years. I don't know what your expectations are, but I think that you may have come from an area that's not quite as hot as Arizona, which is a factor of the battery life.
Yeah, I came from the Midwest, and okay. I used to get maybe 5 years or so on a good battery, and this one popped in three, and I was like, holy cow, yeah. It must be the heat. So, I just thought if hybrid is the same way, but it sounds like you say, they're a little different and shouldn't be something to really worry about if they wanted to go that route.
No, if you want to install yourself, then Costco has good batteries in there.
Yeah, I went to Home Depot and actually got one. So.
Yeah, no, you're fine. You're fine.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for holding, Steve. Keith, you're up next.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hey, this is my first time calling in, so I'm driving a 2012 Camry, four-cylinder. I've got a shutter or a shimmy or a little vibration at about 1,100 to 1,400 RPMs. That's running about 45 miles an hour. Any idea what to check?
The vibration, do you feel it in the steering wheel or the seat of your pants?
I can feel a little bit in the steering wheel. I can actually feel it in the accelerator pedal also.
Okay. All right. So what I want you to do now is I want you to manually shift the car. So I want you to put it in low at this next traffic light, and then I want you to click it, and I want to know if you've got the vibration everywhere. So, and then
I know what you mean by click it.
I'm just move it up in a gear. You're probably going to pull it down into one, and then, I mean, there's probably going to be a way you can go from one, first gear to second gear to third gear to lock up to overdrive.
Okay.
And the question then is can we change it that way? Another thing I want you to do is when you go about 45, 50 miles an hour and you're all by yourself, then if you can get it to vibrate, I want you to leave your foot where it's at on the throttle, but I want you to take your left foot and just gently apply the brakes until you feel the car slow and tell me, is the problem still there? So we're going to go into overdrive and lockup. So overdrive is fourth gear, and lockup is we're locking the motor to the tires. So by having you hit the brake, I'm going to change that. I'm going to make that disconnection, because when you hit the brakes, the computer goes, oh, and it starts downshifting the car. This is what we do to drive things. And so what part of town do you live in?
Down by Florence,
okay.
Queen Creek.
I don't have anybody in that area. Do you work up in anywhere else?
I spent a lot of time up in Mesa and Gilbert.
Okay, Mesa. Let me see who I can. There's nobody in Gilbert. I'm only taking the top crust of the shops. I'm taking the fives. There's too many fives for me to take fours, but fours are okay. And threes are okay. It's just I'm looking for the cream of the crop. I think you should just do what I ask you to do first. Let's manually shift it and see if we can find there's a difference. I need to know if this is a transmission problem or an engine problem or an engine mount problem. It could be any of those. So just here's the question. Can you make it happen for me? And if you can make it happen, you're going to save yourself $100 worth of diagnostic time. Just learn how to make it happen, how to get it to happen, and how to get it to go away. And if you can do that...
Well, I can make it happen if I just leave a stoplight and I'm on a long stretch and I drive slow, I can make it happen. If I jump on it and really try to go quickly, it doesn't happen.
Okay. How many miles are on it?
96,500.
Okay. I don't know if I'd be worried about it needing a transmission right now. This could be a whole lot of other things. Anything that's spinning and moving can be causing this, including tires and drive axles and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not real sure that I'd be planning on a $3,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 transmission. I just get some help, but you'll save yourself a lot of money if you can make it happen. Okay, Pete and Phil, you're my next two callers, but Gil's yelling at me because I missed my break by a minute. We'll be back. Forty-three minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here talking about cars from 10 to noon. You're always welcome to chime in. And my email is mark@marksalem.com. Salem like the cigarette. Mark with a K. mark@marksalem.com. Real quick, Larry Harker's Auto Repair has been around since 1967. I want to tell you that they are in the top five problem finders in all of the valley. These guys can find and fix stuff that others struggle with, including me. I sent them a Dodge truck. I said, I'm blind. They fixed it. So if you're looking for somebody and you've got a really weird problem and people are afraid of it, then Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School. Now, they do oil changes and all that kind of stuff. Bob runs the shop. His wife, Ellen, runs the front counter. They're a wonderful family to go to. They've been around a long time, like I said. But when you get to the level that they're at in finding problems that nobody else can, then you're pretty special, Larry Harker's Auto. Okay, Pete, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yes, hello, sir. Thanks for taking my call. I'll be as brief as I can. I have a 1999 Dodge Ram V6, and it's got 160,000 miles on it now, and I've owned it for over 10 years. It's always been maintained. I had an oil leak. And it was the only fluid that was leaking out of the vehicle. I brought it to a couple mechanics, and they all concurred it was a rear main oil seal. So they wanted anywhere from $800 to $1,500. So I was debating. I brought it to another mechanic. He said it would be about $800 to fix. I brought it home. Maybe a week later, 10 days later, all the transmission fluid was on the ground, on the driveway. So I had it towed back to his place because he gave me, he's been a reasonable mechanic and has always done, some good work for me in the past. They replaced the rear main seal and rebuilt the transmission, okay, because the transmission was old and it was running really well for, it's still running well, the transmission, except for an initial problem at 30 miles an hour when it shifted gear, there's a hesitation. And I explained that one thing to him about the transmission, and I was assured that, don't worry, everything's going to get replaced, blah, blah, blah. It was like $2,000 and change for the transmission, okay? I debated getting it done or not, but loved the truck, great truck. So I had it all done. Everything was fine. The transmission, intermittently, though, would still stutter at 30. So that was never addressed. And the transmission's very smooth, though. But the oil started leaking again. So I brought it down there.
Okay, we've got to get to the end of this story, okay? All right, keep going.
Yes. So I brought it back down there. They said basically a bolt was loose on the transmission gas pan. They retorqued it. They can't get it to duplicate, and there's no oil leak they can find. So I brought it home. There's oil leak in the driveway again. So I called them up and talked to them about it, and he said that, well, it was a seal we replaced, and it's not like a gasket.
Okay. All right. We're done. We can't go on forever. I got a problem with your whole story. I'm not you. Problem with you. You said you had an oil leak. Somebody said it was a rear main seal. That's brown. Then somebody says it's a transmission. That's red. Now, if you're going to reseal the transmission, you pull the transmission out, you reseal the transmission, and you know what? The rear main seal's staring you in the face. So why don't we do both of them at the same time? Let's reseal the transmission. But you said we have a rear main seal. Then you said somebody else says it's a transmission, so you had it rebuilt. There is a disconnect in your whole story. I don't understand how we didn't have the same fluid. I don't understand how we went from a brown to a red. I don't understand why the rear main seal's even involved unless it's red. If it's red, it's the front seal of the transmission or the oil pan. I can't explain why they tightened up a nut and fixed your problem. And maybe you still have the problem. I think this is the most convoluted thing I've seen this week. So I don't know what to tell you, but I'm going to tell you now. Transmission fluid's red, engine oil's black, rear main seals rarely go bad. It's usually the leak above the rear main seal, and the oil's coming down the back of the motor, and it's from the back camshaft, or it's back of the intake manifold, or it could even have an oil pressure switch back there that's leaking, and it runs down the back of the oil, and they go, oh, it's rear main seal. Nope, it's above the rear main seal. So it's a matter of cleaning it up and finding out where the leak's at. We put dye in the engine, and then we have this fancy light that turns the dye orange. So you put dye in the engine, you have the customer drive it for a couple days, bring it back, put your stupid glasses on, get your light. Oh, we can follow the oil right back to the leak it's got. So I think I'm a little leery of the shop that's been doing this, because if you're regurgitating what they said is right, I think you need to find a shop. Phil, you're up next.
Hey, Mark, I got a 2008 Chevrolet Impala with the Ford T60E transmission. Here's the deal. When I start in the morning to go out, I'll take off slowly. The transmission seems like it doesn't want to know if it wants to go in the first gear. If I hit it a little bit, it'll drop down and finally jerk in the, it'll go in the first gear. Now, if I do it manually, if I start out in first gear, I don't have a problem if I manually shift it. So okay. It'll go first, second, third, fourth. But if it's just in the drive position, it doesn't do it all the time, but more so when it's cool. And it's like you step on the gas and it has like a hesitation, like it don't know if it's in between second and first, and then it drops down. So I don't know what that could be.
Okay, you've done a wonderful job. And I want you to stop guessing what it is. You can demonstrate the problem. I hug guys like you if you let me. Because you just skipped all the minutia on the front side and on the back side. I can make it happen. And if it's cold, I'm going to park my car here. I'm going to come back in the morning. Your senior tech's going to go with me. We're going to go drive it, and I'm going to demonstrate how to make it happen and how not to make it happen. That's it. So the question is why is it doing what it's doing? And obviously by you taking manual control of the shift, there's probably a transmission guy out there that can say, I know what that is. Well, go talk to Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange. I'm sure he's seen that before. Your car is, what, 13 years old? And how many miles are on it, Phil?
114, and I just changed the filter and the oil, and I've been religiously changing the transmission fluid about every 30,000.
Okay.
And very little shavings on the bottom.
Okay. But I'm going to, everybody else just turn off the radio because I'm going to talk to Phil. There's no brain, well, there's a brain that operates the electronics, but your engine doesn't know if you change the tranny fluid every 5,000 or 10,000 or 20, it doesn't care. It doesn't care. If that transmission is going to fail at 121,459 miles, there ain't nothing you can do about it. So I want you to consider this suggestion. Stop over maintaining it because you think your car's going to love you and last forever, because you're spending a whole lot of money that you don't need to spend. So my suggestion is all of you that over maintain your car. Mark doesn't do it, and I don't do it to my wife's Ford. And we have a fleet of vehicles that probably numbers 18, 19. We don't over maintain any of them. We have a specific time frame for every single one of them that's centered around the owner's manual. But you're the kind of guy, if you can make it happen, that's wonderful. Go see Automatic Transmission Exchange on Washington. I think it's 40th Street in Washington, yes. And ask one of the senior guys to take a ride with you. Don't do it Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons. And just say to them, I can demonstrate the problem. I'd like you to tell me what it is or what it'll cost to fix it. And I won't have you in my car for 2 hours while we drive around while I try to make it happen. Because that's always a bad thing. So after you, but you said you can make it happen all the time. You're my customer. But I'm going to send you to the better guy, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. When it comes to car repair, guessing is not something your shop can do. That's unethical, and it's not right. We don't guess unless we tell you we're going to guess. So it might very well be some guess, but they should present it that way. I'm pretty sure that your falls on its face at 80 miles an hour, which you shouldn't be driving that fast anyway, is a fuel supply problem. So I would like to guess and replace the filter. And what I want from you is better, worse, or the same. And the filter is going to cost you $95 parts and labor. But I just want you to help me diagnose the problem. But I realize this is a guess. I may very well fix your problem. But when I put your old filter up to my lips and blow through it, if it's like blowing on a straw where somebody's squeezing the end of the straw and your cheeks swell up like Louis Armstrong when he played his trumpet, then that filter's plugged. Then I take the new one, and it's like blowing through a straw. So those are the kinds of things that we do. Customers can help us or just hand us the keys and say, you know, I got this problem. It's always better if you can duplicate it. And if the shop does, if you say, I can duplicate it, I hope that's important to you. And the shop says, no, just give me your keys. Thank you very much. I would really hope mine never did that. I would really hope that mine would understand that that's not what we do and that's not, you know, what we should do. But it's not something we can do. If we close at 6 o'clock on Friday and you walk in at 4:30 when we got 3, 4, 5 customers picking up their car, and I've still got guys out there working in the bays. So please be considerate of the square box I gave you, but just stay away from us in the morning and the afternoon for a test drive kind of thing. But if you can make it happen, I promise you this, you'll save at least $100 somewhere if you can show them what you're talking about. Because that's going to be at least an hour's worth of their time as they drive around. And I'm going to go an hour's worth of time, so it's between $100 and $140. So somewhere in there, you'll save yourself some money. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Gil, have we got anybody in the wings? Because I got 4 minutes.
Lines are open.
Okay. Let me tell you, from my point of view is from a shop owner. And like I said, I started working on cars at a Shell station at Broadway and Priest when I was in high school in 1970. And I got quite an education there, and I loved the fact that I got to watch and help the other mechanics to fix people's cars. And the gratification that the tech had, as well as when the customer was checked out by the tech, the customer, we'd say, you know, call us and let us know. You'll know before you get home. Yes, yes, call us. Mark, Ken, whoever it was, it's fixed. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That's what we lived for. It's just important for us to fix your car and communicate right. And if we start hunting around and telling you we're going to check this, we're going to check this, we're going to check this, and we don't ever find it, it's either we didn't get enough information from you, which is our fault, or we're not performing the same test that you told us how to do. We should have taken you along with us, and if you can make it happen, you should have been in the driver's seat of that car. I would say that 65 to 75% of the shops in this town are owned by guys who've been around the block and have been open more than 10 years. So it's not that you should shy away from the guy that just opened up his own shop. I would think that if he lived in your neighborhood, perhaps you have an oil change and tire rotation with him. How does he treat you? If you go in for a 1995 oil change, which is a stupid number, and they give you a list of stuff that you need for $411.12, I think that's all you need to know. So we're baiting you with the low oil change, and then we're going to, in the vernacular of an auto mechanic shop, we're going to rip your head off. So we're going to just take you for everything we can. There's not very many shops in this town that fit that bill. But you have to remember, we have dealers, we have chains, we have independents, And we all of those are kind of tough. So on the dealer end, they have as many bad guys as the chains do, and the chains have as many bad guys as the independents do. And then you've got the specialty shops, which is transmission and oil change guys. Not too long ago, in Payson, I picked up a friend of mine at a shop, and he had an oil change done, and I looked at his receipt, and it said, premium oil change, $139. That's a synthetic oil change. I looked at the window sticker, and it was 3,000 miles more than what it had now. Synthetic oil on a 3,000-mile oil change and a premium oil change? That's not fair. That's not fair. That should have had 8,000 to 10,000 miles from now. But the shop was calling him back at 3,000 miles with a premium oil. That's a sin. And Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you have a car question, Mark at MarkSalem.com. And nobody answers my emails except me.